Looking for a little Hollywood-style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome into the Thursday edition. Robbie and Rex Rhode, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharski in for Rex Rhode today. Nick Keyser here with you. We got a lot going on around here. A lot going on with the Titans we're going to get into throughout the show today. Preds traded away Alex Carrier last night. Diego Pavia is now eligible again to play football for Vanderbilt next year. And by the way, Tennessee's in the college football playoff in 2 days at Ohio State. So what does Rex Rhode do? He decides not to show up to work. Kuharski's
in.
Does
that guy even work anymore? I mean, I appreciate the opportunities to be here. I like it when it's the three of us, but if it needs to be me and you, you know, that'll work too.
Yeah. I mean, I got all this stuff going on. He just abandoned his duties.
The guy misses a lot of work.
He really does.
Oh, you know, I'm covering a game in Chicago, and I've got some family in Chicago, so I'm going to take the kids and load up. You know what? While I'm up there, I'm going to go see the Bears. I mean, this guy, for a football writer, goes to more games in the crowd than any football writer I know.
Pretty soon, he's going to have, like, his chest painted out there, yes, getting ready to go in the cold.
Devils!
No Rex Rhode today. Kuharski with me today and tomorrow. So we got a lot to get into on that front.
And if I'm going to be with one of you, I'd like to be appreciated so you know you know which one I prefer.
That's right.
And also, you know that I'm not from Boston.
That is true.
So we got that going for us.
We also have people that are already requesting, even before they come on our show tomorrow, for you to work on your Rex Rhode impersonation.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about it. Honestly, in the car this morning, I was almost going to try out loud, but I was still working on it in my head. But I don't think I have much, so I can't promise that this is going to happen. And spoiler alert, I'm going to say that Johnny was all over me because I put up a post about Survivor last night right after it was over. And he's like, why would you do that? And I'm like, well, the headline didn't give away what happened.
That's true.
And if you for some reason, you know, I think live finales of shows with, you know, big conclusions are fair game. But I said, like, he's like, why would you do that? And I said, well, if you didn't want to know what happened, you wouldn't click on the headline that didn't give things away. He's still all over me. I'm like, someday, John Glennon, you're going to understand, like, media and live TV.
Clicks.
And clicks and all of these things. So I'm compelled to say congratulations to Sam Phelan of A to Z Sports, who did not win it, but was right there at the end and really had a remarkable run on this show. And what I wrote is, you know, the Titans press room during a 3-win season can't help but be a miserable place.
Brutal.
When you're dealing with miserable people.
Yeah.
But inside this 18-game season, we had this 14-episode season with, you know, a catalyst of the show where every week we were like, give us a tidbit about what's going to happen. And then, you know, Thursday would break down what happened and get as much information as we could get them to share about what happened. And it made it so much more bearable and fun that we were talking about Survivor instead of the Titans.
I mean, so, the best part of the whole season.
Yeah. But now he's going to go back to being an absolute bore next season talking about the White Sox. So, you know, his 15 minutes are probably up. But it was really a lot of fun be so close to it. And all of us were, you know, I have no interest in Survivor, but when your friend's in Survivor, it was pretty pretty damn fun. And he had a great run. I mean, he was on the edge of out a billion times.
Yeah.
And last night, you know, his competitor had fire that should have burnt through the sky, and he couldn't get it lit, and somehow he wins. Oh, it's pretty damn good.
Pretty good. Congratulations to Sam Phelan from A to Z Sports. Andrew Brunette will be with us at 7:30. Preds in action tonight, taking on the Penguins. We'll get his thoughts on the Alex Carrier trade as well. So a lot going on around here. We'll take your thoughts on all of it throughout the show. 615-737-1025. Brian Callahan addressing the media yesterday. Got a little spicy. We'll get into that coming up here in just a few minutes. But he did address the Will Levis part of this that we knew was coming yesterday. Mason Rudolph will be the starter, and he'll be the starter the rest of the year, it looks like here. So the last 3 weeks of the season, looks like it's going to be Mason Rudolph at quarterback, obviously as long as he stays healthy. And Callahan was asked a lot of different things about Levis yesterday. One of which was, you know, did you wrestle? How hard was wrestling was this coming to this decision, knowing that a big part of why you're here was to work with Will Levis? Here's what Brian Callahan had to say in his press conference yesterday.
Understanding that you got to just get ready to win the next game, how much does that decision kind of weigh on you and the rest of the staff, given that Will was a big talking point coming into this job about why you were excited to take this job?
Yeah, those aren't things that I think too much about in the moment. We can have those conversations at a later date. But, yeah, this is all about trying to get ready to go win this week and put the best possible product we can put on the field. But, yeah, those are things that are outside of my range of thinking at the moment, and we can revisit them at some point.
So outside his range of thinking, he was not willing to go down the long-term part of this with Will Levis yesterday, go down that road. Your reaction to what you heard from Callahan on the Levis front yesterday?
Well, he went more into coach speak mode on the long-term Levis stuff than he goes into most of the time into the coach speak mode. I can understand it because it is an end of the season conversation. But my question was, you know, that he and they have said and indicated that this season was about Will Levis information gathering for a longer term decision. Does this mean then that he's got, you know, sufficient information? And he gave a similar answer there. So the answer is yes.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, if they're not playing him, not intending to play him for these remaining three games, they've got to decide what they're doing with him going forward. They've got sufficient information to make that decision going forward. And I think we're safe presuming that the information isn't like, this is our clear-cut starter going forward, because if he's your clear-cut starter going forward, he'd be your starter right now. Now, he emphasized, you know, this isn't the end of Will Levis, and Will Levis certainly said, you know, I've got good football left in me, whether it's here or somewhere else. I don't see it being somewhere else anytime soon because, as we've discussed, the other options are limited. He's under a reasonable price contract for two more years. It would be very difficult for him not to be in the mix as a Titans quarterback for the next 2 years.
Yeah. Unless they're of the mind that they just want him out, and they want him out of here, and they don't want him in the locker room after. I mean, we see this sometimes in the league where you move on from a guy that you drafted relatively high,
like Kenny Pickett,
it's better to just go ahead and get him out. But
he's not going to be a problem.
I agree with that,
though.
Like, he's not going to be a problem, and he's, you know, cost control wise, he's a second round draft pick. Where if he is your backup quarterback moving forward, it's not a bad option to have as a backup quarterback.
No. Especially if you're replacing him with a veteran. But even if you're not replacing him with a veteran, he's a veteran to a large enough degree now that I don't think, like, if you were going forward with a rookie, would you say, well, we really have to have an old guy in the room? I mean, maybe you go three quarterbacks.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's going to be awfully hard to get three quarterbacks who you want on your roster,
right,
at this stage, unless the third one's, you know, Trevor Siemian on your practice squad, who is of some value because of his experience and what he can add to the practice field, but he's not a guy you want to play.
Yep, no doubt about it. You brought up the Levis comments. Levis asked about, obviously, the way that this all went down, his conversation with Brian Callahan and the future for him at the quarterback position. Here's what he had to say on that part yesterday over at St. Thomas Sports Park.
I don't think that that's the end of the conversation. I still believe that I can be a franchise quarterback to this team. I have the utmost confidence in myself and my ability to lead any team in this league. And I think that this year was great development for me, and I think that I truly did improve. And sure as heck don't want to go out like that. And I know that, you know, there's a positive future for me, whether it's here or somewhere else, and I just got to, you know, have the conversations I need to here, and hopefully I can show and prove that I can still be the guy.
So positive future here for me, or here or somewhere else, and, you know, Levis kind of taking that approach that he did improve this year, doesn't want to go out the way that he went out on Sunday as a starting quarterback, and did not shut the door there publicly of being the franchise quarterback here for the Titans. But, I mean, reading the tea leaves here, PK, it's pretty obvious. Like, the Titans are done with him. The Titans brass is done with him as the idea of being their for sure starting quarterback moving forward here. And I am interested to see what this now means for him, his career. You brought it up earlier this year before all this stuff ever started when he was struggling early in the year. Could he be the type of guy that struggles early in his career as he settles in throughout his NFL career, turns into maybe not, you know, a high-level starter, but a starting quarterback that you can feel comfortable putting in games and knowing you've got a chance to win at some point along the way. We've seen it with Sam Darnold now, and he's played exceptionally well this year. We've seen it more and more throughout the league. Baker Mayfield, Geno Smith, the examples are out there. Could he turn into that as his career goes on? We'll see. But he's not giving up on the idea of it happening here, but I don't think it's happening.
He said the right things. You know, there's so many scenarios that we could run through. But we're talking about him being under contract for 2 years. If they found some scenario here where they had somebody to put in front of him for 2 years that was on a two-year plan and he legitimately was behind that guy for the better part of 2 years and had a chance to emerge at the end of those 2 years. So if he sat for, 24 games now and then had a chance – for 8 games or for 6 games at the end of that to really show you something from what he's talking, you know, that would be kind of the scenario we talk about. Yep. Where a guy sits. Usually it's a change of scenery. But if Brian Callahan got it together and this team got on the good track, these are all seeming long shots now. But if Brian Callahan got it together, he got another quarterback in here who he could put his stamp on, and things were on the upswing, and Will Levis was sitting behind that and learning and watching, and then, you know, could the reemergence conceivably happen here? I think it's highly unlikely, but it's not impossible.
Right.
So, you know, that would be a best-case scenario conceivably for them.
No doubt about it. Brian Callahan sounding off at his press conference yesterday as well. We'll get into that, play that audio for you, well, we can, of it coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road. Paul Karski in with us for the rest of this week. You're on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharski, Nick Kieser here with you on this Thursday morning. Brian Callahan, interesting press conference yesterday. A lot of it about Will Levis. But Callahan was asked about the idea of his team being soft, both physically and mentally, which led to a Brian Callahan tirade yesterday at the press conference. Here's what the Titans head coach had to say when asked about his team being soft.
There are a lot of folks who think this team is soft physically and mentally. How would you respond to that idea?
I mean, you really want to get me going today? yeah, I think, to be honest with you, I think that's complete and total bull, if you want my honest opinion. These guys are tough f***ers, man. They go after it every day. They play hard as hell, and there's at no point have we ever put on tape at any point this season that this is a soft football team. Like I can't even wrap my mind around how that would even be a conversation. I mean, just because we don't win games doesn't mean we're soft. These guys play their ass off. They play hard. They play physical. You can ask any team that plays against us that when they come off the field, they know they played us. Yeah, that makes me relatively angry that would be some presumption. That means you just don't watch the shit, you know. You don't do anything about it that you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know what you're looking at. So I'm not going to stand for anybody calling his football team soft. I think that's shit. So if there's opinions out there that feel that way, then, you know, they don't know anything about NFL football. So I'd like you to walk in there and call one of these guys soft and see what happens. You know, this is not a soft football team at all, mentally or physically. And I think one of the things mentally that's really been impressive about the team is that the way that they keep fighting through the way that this season has gone. They've not shown at any point that they're not up to the task. They come out every day and work. They have, I mean, I'm really, you're going to really get me going now. I mean, these guys come out here and they do everything possible to win games. And if there's any assumption anywhere that's outside of this building, again, we don't focus on all those things, but there's no possible explanation to say that this team is soft any way, shape, or form, mentally or physically. And the way that they go about their work it's insulting to me, to them, to everyone that works here. So, you know, I'm not that no chance ever in hell would I ever admit that to be the case, and neither would anybody in this locker room. So you can kind of shove that one right up your to be honest. So
long answer there from Brian Callahan, where he was going on a tirade about the idea that his football team is soft. Obviously, PK, it generated a lot of reaction yesterday. You were there in person watching this all go down. Had a very interesting follow-up question after that as well. What did you make of Brian Callahan's response?
I'd say 11 times they've shown they're not up to the task.
I would agree.
I don't question their physical toughness, though at some spots. I mean, Nick Petitfrère is not tough.
No.
He's not tough. So you can't be insulted at the question about their toughness. And mentally, I don't think they're a tough football team. I don't think that's an insult. Look, you question a football team's toughness or you suggest that they're soft, it automatically is going to set off that kind of reaction. But, you know, this all came out of Mike Herndon's column.
Yeah,
at paulkuharski.com, where he said there's a certain softness to this team that hasn't been there in recent years. While players absolutely bear some responsibility there, it's often said that a team takes on the personality of its head coach. While I'm not saying Callahan is soft necessarily, he's certainly shown some fire on the sidelines at times this season. I do think his team's culture permits that softness to exist in ways it previously wasn't allowed to under Vrabel's leadership.
Yeah.
I'll also concede that Vrabel was perhaps sometimes too far on the other side of that spectrum, which can be a problem in its own right. But he gave two examples of the Titans seeming soft. And, Nick, if we're ready for those, let's – this is not the Titans seeming soft. This is the Titans saying – soft things about themselves, starting with Peter Skoronski in late October, which is, I think, very relevant to the discussion. And I don't think Peter would change his tune on this. Let's hear what he said.
Yeah, I mean, we certainly haven't shown that so far. I think the whole team and offense especially is when adversity has hit. I think we've just kind of been like, oh, well, here we go. Like, and that's why we've been losing, really, is because we haven't really been able to bounce back from adversity. And I saw that in camp. I think we did a good job of that in camp when we would have some struggles or maybe a bad drive or bad play. I thought we'd bounce back a lot, and we got to get that back because that's really why we're losing games. You know, we've been leading in every game and kind of just giving it away at whatever that inflection point was and not been able to bounce back.
Have they shown that they're able to bounce back in these losses?
I would say no.
So, I mean, that's a player basically saying that they're not mentally tough. Is anybody going to argue with the meaning of that?
I wouldn't think so.
So, I mean, that's in his own locker room, somebody saying that. And then I brought this up from Jarvis Brownlee. Listen closely. This is not – and I got some blowback from other reporters. This is not Jarvis Brownlee in Washington saying, I was cold. Listen to what Jarvis Brownlee is really saying here.
I think we just guys didn't come out playing fast enough. Like you said, we had a lot of turnovers in the first half, and that was damn near the first quarter. So I don't think guys was locked in anymore. I think guys let the cold get to them. Because like me, I'm a Florida guy. I don't like the cold, but I know what comes with playing in this profession. And sometimes, you know, you're going to have to play through things that you don't like. And I think guys let the cold affect them today, you know. A lot of guys ain't going to say it, but that's what I think happened.
A lot of guys aren't going to say it, but yes. I think that's what happened. He's not talking about himself. He's talking about the team. We're not locked in. I think guys let the cold get to them. You have to play through things you don't like. This isn't somebody yesterday said, well, Javon Kearse didn't like the cold. You think he wasn't tough? That's not what he's saying. Now, later, Callahan said, well, I think he was making an excuse, and Brownlee, you know, didn't want to comment any further on it. But in the moment, after a bad loss to Washington when it was 40 degrees, which is not NFL cold, he said, we're not locked in. I think guys let the cold get to them. You have to play through things you don't like, which is saying they didn't play through things they don't like in a game where they were down 28 in 20 minutes. Does that sound mentally tough?
No. No.
I mean, that's fair. These are two examples Mike Herndon used. I don't think that those two examples show a team that's mentally tough.
I
don't know why there's any I understand why Brian Callahan's going to defend him, but I don't understand any media or fans jumping to defend their mental toughness.
Well, I agree with everything you just threw out there on that front. I do think we talked about this off air too. When somebody uses the word soft, I think that's going to generate a response pretty naturally to what you saw from Brian Callahan yesterday. Like when he started going into the – like I would challenge you to go in the locker room, call any one of these guys soft, see what happens. It's like, okay. Well, that's what these conversations generally devolve into. But, like, I mean, it depends on what you're talking about with soft. Like, do I think that these guys, by and large, are like – you know, physically just giant babies out there and soft? No, I don't.
No.
But the mental part of it is part of the game, right? Like,
big part.
Fighting through when things don't go your way and being able to handle adversity is a part of playing NFL football. And they've had 7 games this year where they've lost by 10 or more points. You know, some of that is that they're not good enough. Some of that is they don't respond well when things start to go poorly and handle the mental side of the game properly that way. And then, I mean, I think the Brownlee example is a good example. Like, he said it in his comments. You know, other guys on the team aren't going to say this, but this is my observation of what happened today out here is they had a tough time fighting through the cold.
And look, new teams oftentimes, unfortunately, too often with this team, when things change, it takes a while, right? So Peter's talking about at the inflection point, we don't respond well. Well, some teams, you know, they don't respond well until they do respond well, and yep. Then there's kind of a moment that flips things. We haven't seen that moment. Callahan's certainly hoping for that moment, and they're all kind of waiting on that moment. Who's going to carry them at that moment? You know, we don't know. We know who the primary candidates are and all of that, but that moment hasn't come. Now, a lot of fans just like that Callahan showed some fire there. He's showed fire before at certain moments in press situations. He certainly showed fire on the sidelines in couple situations that have been well captured by the TV broadcast crew. But that felt a little performative. And I don't know that that's you know, the greatest element. I think, you know, he said, "Do you really want me to do this?" You didn't hear me off to the side. Said, "Yes,
yes, yeah, go
yes.
ahead."
But you know, it's a clip that's well traveled. I knew while he was saying it would be well traveled. I got the Bleacher Report, like, "Hey, permission to use this clip." So, you know, he knew what he was doing in the moment. It probably makes him look good to a certain segment that he needs to look good to.
Yeah.
But how much it really means, I don't know.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. So Brian Callahan sounding off yesterday at the press conference about the idea of the Titans being soft. What do you think? Hit us up. Give us a phone call, 615-737-1025. We'll have more reaction to that coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan tonight for Vanderbilt women's basketball. Commodores taking on Dayton with a 6 o'clock tip-off. Pre-game show beginning at 5:45. Coverage also available on the 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Rowe. Taking your thoughts on the Titans, on Brian Callahan, his press conference yesterday. Let's head back to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Ed in Jersey. Ed, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Edward.
Good morning, guys. PK, thank you for the bellowing or the, you know, the verbose yes yesterday. That was the best part of that.
I didn't know if it was audible.
A rhetorical question. He asked a rhetorical question and it gets an answer. It's always funny. That was the best part of it. Anyway, this theory, and PK, I know you had posted to the contrary on this, but this theory out there that he's benching Levis because these next 3 games are going to mean his coaching future. Do you buy into that at all?
I buy that he certainly is looking for a chance to look better. And I don't want to say scapegoat Levis, but, you know, can certainly maybe look better in these last three and be able to say, well, it was Levis. I think he's safe. I think everybody's safe. The indications I'm getting are that everybody's safe. But, look, we know that Amy Adams Strunk makes some rash decisions, I think, weighted by particular moments. And I think if they're wearing – They're wearing their Oilers uniforms against Houston in the finale. You know, if they go out and get pasted by Houston in the finale, and she's got people whispering in her ear, you know, the right people, can she go against everything that she's indicated to her people to this point in time?
Sure,
absolutely, she could.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing we've learned is you never know what's going to happen with this group. I mean, you bring it up. We brought up the Russini report last year.
Right.
In November. Like, by Thanksgiving, Mike Vrabel was coming back and was the coach. And by the time the second week of January rolls around, he's fired. So things could change in a hurry around.
Exactly.
Here. Now, if it is that way, and her plan is to bring back Carthon and Callahan and this whole regime for another year, then that's her plan, and hopefully she's got the guns to stick to it at this point if that's what she wants to do. As far as the...
If that's your plan, by the way, we may not hear from her at all.
We probably won't.
Probably won't.
Yeah. I mean, the recent history would tell you won't. So I would probably go ahead and prepare yourselves for that if you're Titans fans. The idea of switching to Rudolph to make himself look better or to save his job... Like, I was talking about this with Rexrode. Like,
that's some switch.
Like, Rudolph is the guy coming in here to say... Like, to me... Like, if you're, and I'm trying to view all this through the lens of Amy Adams Strunk, like making this decision. Like, if Mason Rudolph goes out there and they win two of their next three, and by the way, they're playing Indianapolis, Jacksonville, and Houston. Indianapolis isn't good. Jacksonville is horrible. And Houston might have the division locked up by the time that rolls around. So that game could mean absolutely nothing to them. So I don't know how much we're going to learn about this team in general over the next 3 weeks. So I guess my point is, What really changes about the equation here if they go out and stumble into a win or two over the next 3 weeks? So I don't think a lot changes on that front. So I get it. In professional sports, as a head coach, it's better if you're doing some winning than losing all the time. I understand that. But I don't know if the equation of the overall picture of this changes at all over the next 3 weeks. They're 3-11 right now.
Yeah, in many ways, the story of the season is written. But, you know, you are what your record says you are. I'm a believer in that, you know, that the stakes aren't particularly high or the competition isn't particularly good. It's not their fault the way the schedule was organized. It's not their fault the rest of the division is bad. And, you know, if they win a couple here, they get the record, you know, to look a little bit better. Hurts them in the draft, obviously, which, you know, if they were desiring one of those top quarterbacks is going to take them out of range. Not that they're in range now. But, you know, and I don't believe in the tanking stuff. I think they should go out and try to win. I think winning is important for guys like Latham and Sweat and Skoronski. And, you know, we played that clip about Skoronski talking about the inflection points and them not getting over the hump at those points. And if they could get over the hump at those points in a couple games here, that would have meaning for the franchise. And I think there's great value in that. I'm not convinced that they can, but what if they did in two games here? You know, to me, you have to consider the people you have before you start thinking about the people you are going to get.
Yeah, and look, we've seen Rudolph. Like, we know what Rudolph is. So, there's this idea out there, like, is this an audition for Rudolph?
That's great. They know
to be
exactly
the bridge quarterback for next
exactly
year?
Exactly what he is.
Rudolph is not going to be the plan to be the quarterback next season. If so, then you probably need to move on from everybody right now. Like, I don't think that's going to happen. So, look. One thing that's interesting about this, even Titans fans that I think are out on Levis and have been out on Levis, with three games left in the regular season, look at it as, oh, you're going to Mason Rudolph. So why exactly am I watching this team the next 3 weeks here? Like, it's been an interesting response, even for people who I know good and well are out on Will Levis, that they're making the switch to Rudolph at this point. Like, oh, good, Mason Rudolph the last 3 weeks. Give me some of that.
I think most people, a high percentage of people would have rather have seen more Levis than Rudolph. Now, a share of those people are into them losing these three games.
That is true.
For draft position. Though that seems to have quieted down some. I don't know if the tankers are just tired or if they've come to terms with the fact that Titans are going to try to win for what that's worth. I don't know. I'd be interested to hear from some pro-tank people.
Yep, I would too. And they also, you know, the other part of this is, you know, the Titans are 3-11, and there are years, PK, where they would be pretty significantly either at the top or in the running for number one overall pick with that record. There's just so many bad teams.
It's the wrong year to
be
bad. It's the wrong year to need a quarterback.
Yeah.
When the Titans line things up, they have a bad sense of time.
Yeah, they do. I mean, right now, I mean, Vegas is awful. The Giants are awful. New England, Jacksonville, Carolina. I know you're playing Jacksonville again this year, so maybe this picture changes a little bit. But, I mean, the Raiders have lost 10 games in a row. We think they're going to roll off a win at some point here. Like, the idea of them moving up to where they're like one or two or three overall, where you feel pretty good about, like, if you love Shedeur Sanders or Cam Ward, being able to get into that spot. I mean, even with as bad as the Titans are right now, the odds are saying they're probably not going to get up that high.
Bottom of the league is really bad. And the Titans are about to play two other teams that are there, though Indianapolis record-wise, I guess, doesn't even qualify.
Yeah.
And they're bad.
They are.
So, I mean, you know, you could take a minute. I know nobody has any sympathy for Indianapolis, but think of that fan base. I mean, that team is pretty much in tatters, too. And, you know, they're where the Titans end up. If the Titans win a couple of these games, they're not drafting anywhere close to the top, and they need a hell of a lot, too. And they should be in a spot where they're finally firing their GM. I don't know about their coach, but Ballard should be at the end of his rope.
He has gotten a lot of run there. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. We'll take more of your thoughts on the Titans. Also get to some big news for Vanderbilt that came out yesterday afternoon, and a trade that the Predators pulled off last night. All that coming up. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Join Jared Stillman, Chris Sanders, and Derek Mason at Twin Peaks in Madison this Sunday for the pregame show, 9:30 to 11:30. They'll break down the Titans Week 16 matchup against the Colts, give you the latest updates before the game. Pregame show presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment, Sundeck Nashville, Sloan's Motorcycle ATV, and award-winning Blue Note Juke Joint and Blue Note Crossroads Bourbon. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
I am not looking for sympathy, but you get to this stage of this season, and, you know, it's college football games going on Saturday.
Yeah.
And during those, you're getting your butt to glorious Indianapolis.
Yes.
And then a week later, you know, it's not like you're going to the beach in Jacksonville. I mean, those are not two of the star attraction cities on the Titans travel list. We go there every year.
Yeah.
But you'd like to, like, spread them out, maybe take them away from the holidays. And it's not I know most people are not fired up about the next 2 weeks of football.
I would agree.
I would say people who are traveling to the next 2 weeks of football could probably top that list.
Even less fired up.
Yeah. So my mom's in town. You know, my mom is about to turn 90. She's visiting. My wife is a delight. You know, she loves my mom.
Yeah.
She treats her great. But for me to say, hey, Mom, thanks for being here. I'm taking off for Indianapolis. It's you know, again, I'm not looking for sympathy, but that's rough.
It is rough.
Hey, I'm back.
Hey.
But in a few days, I'm taking off for Jacksonville.
You know, Jacksonville, they got that milky pool down there where you could go wade in the waters if you wanted to in the middle of the game.
You know, if the temperature is right.
Live report, Paul Kuharsky from the pool.
If the temperature is right, the windows in the Jacksonville press box fog up in a way that you can't see the pool.
Oh, well, Well,
or the field.
Well, when those two teams play, it may not be the worst thing.
One
guys
time,
I can't see.
One time when I wasn't the earliest guy to the press box, there was a puddle that had dripped into my press box seat, and the fellas were kind enough to take a picture so that I could see what I could anticipate what was coming, because they knew how excited I would be to arrive and set up my laptop in a puddle. Fortunately, there's a lot of room because there's not that much media there, so I was able to relocate.
Make some adjustments. Rex Road has talked about, I don't know if this is still the case or not, but the Jacksonville press conference, the men's room, like when you're going to the bathroom, there's the urinal, there's no divider, and there's the sink right next to it. So, I mean, you're just in there. Well, somebody, you're washing your hands, and the sink is right there, and the urinal and the sink pretty close together, no divider.
That's
true. It's a tough one.
That's true. Look, I'm in and out of the bathroom. I'm not in there studying things like Rex Road.
Apparently he does.
Rex Road,
he takes inventory.
Drawing up a plan, like a criminal planning on coming in through the roof. That's not me. I just go, do my business, wash my hands, get out.
Yeah.
I'm not studying the schematics.
I think he broke down every square inch.
Yeah.
The Jacksonville press box bathroom.
While he was eating his lunch in there.
You have to take some notes.
Double duty. They used to have a chocolate
sandwich.
They used to have a chocolate fountain in Jacksonville, which really offset a lot of things. It's like a chocolate fondue fountain.
And that's no longer.
Offset a lot of things. But it's been a while.
Man.
Somebody send me a text. When's the last time we saw that chocolate fountain?
BK, some good news for Vanderbilt yesterday. Diego Pavia, for the moment, going to be allowed to play in 2025. So Pavia's eligibility was up, and he was suing the NCAA for violating an antitrust law, basically because that he played some junior college seasons, and he argued that the junior college seasons towards NCAA eligibility was a violation of the antitrust law, and it prohibits him from earning NIL numbers. So I didn't know what
Which is a strong argument.
Yeah, I would agree. I didn't know exactly how this was going to play out because we've not seen anybody do this yet. Now, granted, pretty much everything that you sue the NCAA for right now, people are winning. Like, they're winning against the NCAA. Judge William Campbell has ruled that he's allowed to come back and play for another season. The NCAA still does have the ability to challenge the court's injunction. But it looks like Diego Pavia going to be back playing football for Vanderbilt next year, which is obviously a huge deal for them. He was
huge deal for them. Huge deal for him. Nice precedent setter. I imagine there are other guys who have come up in similar fashion. We know many previously. The NIL era is relatively new, so you can't say too many guys have lost out on this setup. But some have, certainly, who are kicking themselves for not having done this. So they're probably not as prominent as he's been. Good for him, and great for Vanderbilt. I don't know if there's an appeal to be had by the NCAA. There was no mention of that in what I read of this.
I think they might have the ability to, but, I mean, at this point, they lose every time. You might as well just let it go. I mean, it looks like they're going to be on the losing end of most of these lawsuits.
And so, terrific job by him, and that bodes really well for Vanderbilt. I mean, their schedule next year is just absolutely brutal.
Yep.
They play everybody, and they play everybody on the road. So, it's going to be hard for them to match what they did this year, but – he is such a wild card, on a good Saturday, he can give you a chance in a lot of ways to scramble things up in a league that there was a lot more parity than anybody expected.
Yep.
I think you go forward with Vanderbilt, a lot of SEC people are less likely to blow off a Vanderbilt game than they've been in a long, long time because of the dynamic that he brings.
Yeah.
And they get a second year of that, which is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it's great news for Vanderbilt. It's great news for Clark Lee. And, look, there's a lot of things you could point to for their year this year and turning things around. And Clark Lee deserves a lot of credit for basically being willing to change up everything he was doing and make some adjustments that way. But it starts with Pavia. Like, his ability, his fire, his ability to rise to the occasion in the big moment, I think was a big part of what they were able to do this year. So big news for him. Preds make a trade last night, sending Alex Carrier to the Montreal Canadiens. They get back Justin Barron, who was a first-round pick in 2020 by Montreal. Carrier signed a deal this offseason, signed a three-year contract, and after 32 games played this year for the Preds, he is on his way back to Montreal. Probably exciting for him in some ways. He's from that area in Quebec, so I'm sure you know Montreal will be a big deal to him going back and playing there. But my initial take on this, you know, the Predators have had some injuries that have piled up with their defensemen, Carrier being one of them. He got hit in the head last week and has been out. He's been back on the ice, kind of working his way back through things the last few days. But in the meantime, they've had some of their younger players come in and fill in roles on defense. And one of them in particular has done an outstanding job. Adam Willsby has come in. He got his first NHL goal the other night. He's been really good defensively. And I can't help but wonder if Barry Trotz and the Preds looked at this and said, all right, you know, we've got a lot of long-term contracts. Carrier just signed a deal. It's not an overly expensive deal. But if you trade him away, you can save about $1.5 million against the cap. Why not just go do that? And they made the swap, bring in Barron, and I think Adam Willsby going to be an everyday NHL player. So, PK, not very often in sports you see somebody get signed to a three-year contract in the offseason, and then less than halfway through the next season they're traded away. But that's what the Predators have done here.
And they signed some people to some big contracts. I mean, is this the beginning of them trying to be more financially conservative?
Yeah.
Is the question to me.
Could be. And trying to create some room potentially to make a move down the pipe here. I still think they need to, at some point here, they're going to have to address center ice, either for the now or for the long-term future. Like, they need serious help there. So clearing up some cap space, maybe for Barry Trotz to do that coming up. By the way, Barry Trotz will speak today at 10:10, right before the Predators take on the Penguins tonight in their morning skate. Later today, Andrew Burnett will be with us on the program here in about 30 minutes at 7:30. So looking forward to that. Coming up next, PK did a dive this week into the roster for the Titans, taking a look at Rand Carthon, what he inherited, what's there now, what did we learn from this, and what does it say about the job that Rand Carthon has done. We'll get into that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.